Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's called a shelter, but the children locked inside cannot leave. The windows have alarms. Kids in custody might get 1 hour outside per day, and they've been told not to comfort one another when one of them breaks down in tears. Thousands of migrant children have been housed in facilities which human rights advocates say threaten to damage their mental health and disrupt their development. Perhaps even more disturbing, these facilities have become moneymakers for for-profit companies. A new frontline partnership with the Associated Press investigates kids caught in the crack down, and you can see the premiere tonight on SDPB TV. That's at 9 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Mountain, or watch online at pbs.org/frontline. And today we welcome Frontline's Daffodil Altan for a preview of the broadcast. Daffodil, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So early on in this frontline, which viewers can see tonight, we meet a boy named Martin. He's 16, and when he's first brought into custody, he describes this place as a stadium with cages inside, and that's where they keep the people. This is before he's sort of transferred to the next place. But one of the first questions he asks is, you know, is this prison? What is this? And I think that's where we should start. What is this? What are these facilities?
Sure. And for Martin, whose story we tell in the film, he's an undocumented teenager who grew up and spent his life, basically came here when he was 9 months old. So when he finds himself apprehended in a traffic stop, suddenly apprehended by the Border Patrol, because he was not with his mother, he was with an uncle, he was deemed an unaccompanied minor. And so all of the children who arrive at the border, who arrive alone, are classified as unaccompanied minors. And also during and with ongoing family separation, as soon as a child is separated from a family member, they're deemed unaccompanied. So where he was placed was with other children who were alone, who were unaccompanied in a Border Patrol processing facility. This is the first step when someone arrives to the U.S. They are processed with Customs and Border Protection at the U.S. border in Border Patrol processing facilities. These are kind of like triage stations, if you will, where migrants are supposed to be processed very quickly and moved out, released very quickly because they're not fit really to hold people for long periods of time. As we saw in some of the news reports earlier this year, which my partners at the Associated Press, they broke some of these stories. Actually, children were being held there for much longer than they needed to be and were really in awful conditions. So when Martin arrives there, he's actually right in the middle of this national scene. It's in late June 2019 when certain facilities were holding many children and trying to move them on to the Department of Health and Human Services. But either, you know, there was a breakdown in the communication between the two agencies. It's never been entirely clear why those children were languishing. Whether there wasn't enough room for them at the Department of Health and Human Services. So Martin arrives and he's in, you know, he, as this basically almost American boy, finds himself in the middle of this scene, which a lot of us had only seen some pictures of and images of or heard about from Congress members who visited, but he finds himself in the middle of it. And as he's kind of doing a 360 and taking in where he's landed, he is not able to make sense of it because it's so extreme. Right. And he's kind of in shock.
Yeah. And he's just going to work. I mean, he's 16-year-old. He was going to work for the day and nothing prepared him for what was about to happen. He's a high school athlete. He's got a family. This is a big surprise. Now, you've been covering these issues of undocumented Americans for a decade. Tell me how quickly have things changed in recent months and recent years? What has changed from a policy standpoint?
Especially looking at the situation with children, because, you know, one of the things that's shifted, one of the things that's striking, and that our team with the Associated Press, the questions we were all asking are, why are there so many more children in government custody? Where are they being housed? what happened here? Is it, you know, I think there are so many, the news cycle is so quick that often you think, well, it's just, is it more children that are arriving? Is it more children that are being separated? And it's actually a combination of things. But what our reporting found is that there have been, you know, a handful of very specific policies that have actually contributed to the number of children in government custody. And it's a radical shift. There's never been children, migrant children, detained in this way en masse. You know, it's where we found we were seeing situations of mass detention. And I think the public was trying to make sense of what's going on here. Why are children in these tent cities, or why are they in mass detention facilities with thousands of other children? Why did that happen? And so what we're looking at in the film and taking apart are a handful of the policies that actually led to that increase of children in government custody and detention, mass detention, and children being held for longer periods of time, which, you know, actually what the mental health experts that we consulted with in our reporting have said is that this actually is damaging to children of all different ages. But the policies specifically, you know, I think we're all familiar with child separation, the child separation policy, and the way that really impacted the system is that you had children who were suddenly being separated. You know, I think we all remember that it happened very quickly. And so the Department of Health and Human Services, they were suddenly receiving all of these children and needing to quickly shelter them while also working on reunifying them with parents. And so what this did is, they have a network of foster care programs, shelter care programs, small shelters. But what happened was the older children, the teenagers, began to be displaced within their shelter care system so that the smaller children could be housed. And so there was this need to suddenly open the larger emergency influx shelters, as they're called. And these are the very large shelters that we saw in the news that are really designed to only be thrown up as emergency shelters for very short periods of time. And what ended up happening was, as more children were separated, then the teenagers were displaced, then these emergency shelters opened, they started filling up and filling up. And then you have lesser known policies that began to target the guardians, the legal guardians that were stepping up to take care, to receive these children. So there's a process within the Department of Health and Human Services where you, as a sponsor, a relative of the child, you come forward, you give your information, and you receive the child into your custody. And what shifted with the administration were a series of policies that actually began to target these guardians criminally, and that had never happened before.
One of the things I remember from last year was South Dakota's U.S. Senator Mike Rounds coming to town for a town hall and being peppered with questions from citizens about what was happening at the border. And, you know, there was a woman who said, you know, I can't sleep at night because of these children in cages. And he said, here, let me make it better for you. And he talked about this idea that they were trying to protect some of these children from being trafficked. And that gets right to the policy that you're talking about, is some of these kids are being told, you know, this, in fact, there's a boy in the films, like it's his aunt who's trying to claim him and get him released from this facility. And they're like, she's not your aunt. She's trying to kidnap you. She's trying to traffic you. What was going on with that policy? Was there a huge problem with these children being claimed by traffickers that they were trying to prevent? How much did it slow things down for families who were just families trying to make contact?
Sure. Yeah. And so, and what's interesting is actually our previous reporting in our previous film, which was called Trafficked in America, and where we also, you know, worked with our Associated Press collaborators from this film, is we actually had all reported on that situation. On, you know, there was the well-known case of a group of Guatemalan teenagers who were released to sponsors in Ohio who actually forced them to work against their will, labor traffic them at an Ohio egg farm. This case, you know, received national attention. There were congressional hearings. And then our reporting partners also found that there were other cases of children, a few dozen cases of other children who had been placed with, you know, exploitative sponsors who were taking advantage of them. And this happened as a result of a surge of migrant children who were coming in 2014 that actually received a lot of media coverage. There were so many children that came that the government was overwhelmed and began to release children very quickly to those sponsors because research has shown that it's better to place children with usually a relative, a known person in a home rather than to keep them in detention and custody. But the fallout there was that some children were placed with problem sponsors. So as a corrective measure, after some of these hearings, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is in charge of the care of these children, decided, okay, we need to correct, we need to vet these sponsors more, we need to do more background checking. And that started to, then it became this sort of sponsor, vetting to the extreme where everyone in the household was fingerprinted. The backgrounding system that was put in place was very delayed. You'd have to submit your fingerprints and it would take 3 months sometimes to get, a result back. And so that effort, though, that, a meaningful effort to try to prevent kids from landing in a problem household where you were going to be exploited, that was a genuine effort. What shifted was when President Trump took office, with the administration shift, is that there were policies then implemented that they said were designed to, keep these kids safe. But what actually ended up happening was they began targeting sponsors for smuggling. So if you help pay somebody to help get your child up here, if you in any way had any involvement in helping to bring your child up here, then you were charged, you could be investigated for smuggling and prosecuted for smuggling. So it began to sort of, the policy to protect children began to shift, and these policies actually became efforts to apprehend undocumented sponsors. And we spoke with a former deputy director of ICE who was involved in a later policy, which involved the Department of Health and Human Services sharing sponsor information with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It may sound benign, but this is actually something that was never done before because a large number of the sponsors stepping forward to receive their children are themselves undocumented. And once that started happening, that also led to ICE apprehensions and arrests. And so the former assistant deputy director of ICE, who we spoke to in the film, acknowledges and says that he thought this would be a preventative measure. But what he saw happening in the intention and the agreement between the two agencies was actually an effort to apprehend more people and to target more sponsors. Mm. So that actually then led to sponsors being afraid to come forward to claim their kids. So kids began piling up and languishing in this shelter detention system.
Let's talk about the money that is being made and the fact that some of these and the facilities that you explore in tonight's Frontline are for profit and therefore sort of incentivized to detain more children and to detain them longer. That seems like a pretty big shift and a pretty big red flag.
There is one single for-profit company, Comprehensive Health Services, whose parent company, Caliburn, is a federal contractor. They do a lot of military contracts. And former Chief of Staff John Kelly joined its board of directors after leaving the White House. And what's interesting, there's in terms of optics is that he was actually, an advocate for the family separation policy that led to actually more children in detention. So now he sits on the board of this company. They, to be clear, also this for-profit company began operating the large emergency shelter in Homestead, Florida, during the Obama administration, during that previous surge in 2014, where there were so many kids that came, that the Department of Health and Human Services then put out a contract for bids, and this company decided to bid and became the first private company to be working in this area of child sheltering or detention. And so they received the contract, and the shelter was opened temporarily for less than a year during the Obama administration, and then you know, emptied out once the child population went down, and it reached about 800 children in custody. And then during this next wave of children coming, but also of policies creating the need for more housing for these children, the company was given a contract this time around with it was a no-bid contract. They were immediately just given the contract again, and they opened it up, and Homestead filled, I think at its peak, was at 2,400 children. So many more children than had ever been held there before. And these emergency influx shelters, which are usually on federal land, they are unlicensed. And because of their nature for being emergency shelters, are much more expensive to operate. So the cost per child per bed ranges anywhere from $600 to $1,200 per night in these emergency facilities, compared to around $200 at the smaller permanent facilities that HHS operates. So much more expensive. And suddenly you have the only for-profit company operating the largest shelter, which became more of a, you know, it's not a permanent shelter because it's now been, you know, emptied out again. But it was open for a very long time, and children were spending 90 days at one point, 100, 200 days there and languishing. And so very expensive operation. And the company, you know, I think within the last year, we reported in the film, has made $300 million in contracts running that shelter. And they ran five other shelters, smaller shelters, right. The tender age shelters holding smaller children.
And because of this partnership between Frontline and the Associated Press and the data journalism, we know that there more than 70,000 children have been held without their parents in the past year. That's more than any country in the world. And throughout the film tonight, you hear again and again experts saying, you know, kids, no amount of detention is developmentally safe for a child. The longer that they're held, the more they deteriorate psychologically. They should be in the least restrictive environment that you can possibly create. None of that is happening in these shelters. What are the long-term effects that are potential? What are you hearing some of the concerns are for these children in the future?
One of the things that was striking was we repeatedly asked to go into Homestead because that was one of the, it was the largest at the time when we were doing our reporting with holding the most children, and we were never permitted to go in with our cameras, but we were given access to smaller shelters, another shelter run by the for-profit company, which holds the youngest children, you know, 0 to 17. There were also young mothers there with their babies who were being detained. And we were also given access to another shelter in Florida that had teenagers, very small shelter. And so one of the things you see, you know, and I think to be fair, is at the shelter level, the small shelters, at least, because I can't speak for Homestead. I only know what we heard from children and psychologists and attorneys who were inside Homestead, was at the smaller shelter level, you see, you know, there are workers there, the caretakers, the psychiatrists, the therapists, they're caring for the children in the best way that they can. And so I think what is difficult to sort of understand or for all of us to process is that even though you do have very caring people with them, what the research shows, decades of research shows, what the child experts say is that any amount of detention, especially for the youngest children, being separated from primary caregivers is damaging. It's not good for them to be in a situation where they're away from the person that they're beginning to bond with. You need that daily bonding. That being away for weeks, days without that parent can be harmful to your long-term health. And for the teenagers, what happens is that their brain is going through a development where they're also still children, though. And I think one of the most important points that one of the psychologists makes in the film is that, you know, we tend to think of teenagers as mini adults, but they're actually very much still children who need also to feel, they need affection, they need touch, they need to be reassured. They need to know that this isn't going to last forever. And where they are in their developmental stage, they tend to think as bad things that happen, that those things are going to go on forever, that there is no end in sight. And this is, in fact, what we heard from a lot of the teenagers we spoke with. They just felt, began to feel so desperate because they didn't know if they would ever get out of these places. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the large facilities, they were never taken out. You know, they didn't go on outings. They only were taken out if they had medical or legal appointments. And for teenagers, another thing that we learned is that they need to go out and explore and be in the world as they're developing their autonomy. So a lot of what the conditions that they were in go against their developmental stages. So the mass detention is really what is hard on them. Mm-hmm. HHS does operate smaller shelters, permanent shelters. And, you know, for teenagers, those seem to be more home-like settings. They're taken on outings. Those seem to be healthier spaces, even though any amount of detention, you know, really what the experts say is that any amount of detention is really not good for children.
Daffodil Alten, thank you so much for the work that you've done on this front line, and thank you for telling us just a small part of that story today.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
You can see Kids Caught in the Crackdown online at pbs.org/frontline tonight on SDPB TV1. That's at 9 p.m. Central, 8 Mountain.